Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are, however you may be listening. I'm glad that you're here. A special shout out to our online community, our small group communities that are meeting really all over the place. We lost track of them, but I think of my buddy Todd down in Bradenton, Florida. A shout out to Todd and his crew that meet. They follow us 1 week behind as we're doing this study on leadership values. And Todd's a Furman grad and was part of Grace Church for a long time, took what he learned here down there and is sharing it, and that's happening all over the place. And so we are really, really thankful for all that conversation and dialogue, and I'm really humbled to be able to lend my voice to the conversation this morning. And so let me introduce myself. My name is Scott, and I'm one of the pastors on staff here. Let's see, I've been on staff as a pastor a little over 10 years. I've been a Christian. I was thinking about this year, October, will be 20 years. So October of 94 is when I came to Christ. And I'm just a few months short of turning 40. So I've been a man for almost 40 years. And so those are my credentials. Take them or leave them. That's about the best I can offer you this morning. But as we are cresting this halfway point in our study on leadership values, let me just reset for a second. And what we have tried to do is we have tried to take some language that captures some big ideas. Take a few phrases that capture some big ideas, certainly not all there is to leadership, but plenty for you to go away with and discuss, do some self-evaluation, and put a plan in place to be able to grow in this area, which we would say is a God-ordained area, that it is a core calling that we all have as men to lead. And so I don't know that we've given you an official definition of leadership. There's a bunch of different ways to define it and look at it. I'll just give you one way to think about it this morning. Leadership happens whenever you influence the thinking, the belief, or the development of another person. So as an influencer, the thinking, the belief, the development, when you are doing that, you are leading. And so that's why there is a myriad of applications to all of these talks. There are job and ministry and marriage and parenting and school. There are all kinds of applications. But we got to remember, too, that the leadership challenge, that influencing, it starts first right here. It starts first with leading ourselves. So we take all that and we run it through our own thought and mind and heart and motivations, and then we can go and apply it to all these different areas. And so let's take a look at this slide as we're doing a little recasting. So we started out, our first value we talked about was owning the cause. And so if owning the cause, owning the mission is this overarching value, then there are a couple of ways that you can accomplish that. A couple of primary ways. One that we talked about a couple of weeks ago is being action-oriented. Being action-oriented. And the other one we're going to talk about this morning is building relational capital. Okay, so I've charted this so you could see, kind of put them opposite, but you don't accomplish the mission of owning the cause through one direction or the other. You have a bent, you have a leaning towards either being action-oriented or relationships, but you can't just own the cause by exclusively through one pathway. It's a lot like I was reading an article this week, and it talked about the work and the life balance. And the author was making the point. He said, "I don't even like the word balance, because when you say it that way, you almost pretend like those two things are opposite and they have to be weighed against each other in order to have some kind of perfect equation." And so the author was making a point that these two things have to be integrated, work and life. And I would say the exact same thing for a graphic. I would say that being action-oriented and being a relational and building relational capital have to be integrated. In fact, I would say that you can't be a really great leader without doing both. So leadership is about results, being action-oriented, and it's about relationships. It's about performance, and it's about people. It's like if your wife, girlfriend, significant other, whomever, if they said, am I smart or am I pretty? Okay? There is no ambiguity in how you should answer that question. You don't have to embrace that at all. It's a both and. It is a both And that is the case when we're talking about the two pillars that help us accomplish owning the cause. And so when you think about building relational capital, for some of you in the room, it is as easy as breathing. And in fact, your livelihood is staked on it. I'd love to see a show of hands. How many of you are in some type of customer service industry, sales, where you're dealing with people all the time? Can you raise your hands? Okay, a driver of our economy. So for you, what it looks like to build relational capital, some of this is just, you're going to say, that's obvious. That's obvious. I get it. One of the guys in my group, my small group here at Grace, I was talking about that I was up this week, and he said, what's the topic? And he was sad because he had to miss out. He was traveling because he's in sales, and he's off building relational capital somewhere. And I told him what it was, and he said, if building relational capital was all there was to leadership, I would be president of the United States. And some of you may feel that same way. You're like, this is easy. But what I want to do is I want to define it. Because sometimes the things that come easily, we don't always know why they come easily. We don't have good definitions for them. And as we look at some of these characteristics of the value, then you can judge if you would be on the ballot for president with my buddy Eldon or not. And I can use his name because we've built relational capital over the years. So hello to Eldon. Here's a simple definition of what building relational capital would look like. It's cultivating great relationships with people who can help you reach your mission. Just pretty simple. Cultivating great relationships with people that can help you reach your mission. And so when you think about cultivating, what images come to mind? The images of diligence and hard work, of nurturing, of time, of an organic process, of something that is shaped, that is pruned. Those are images that come to mind when you think about cultivating. And so we land on this word of building to really describe what we're doing with relational capital. We are building it. And so let me give you some bullet points. I don't get to talk that often, so when I do, I like to give you your money's worth. So I've got some slides. I want you to take notes. I think this will be helpful for you. These are five elements that really encompass what I believe it looks like to build relational capital. One is creating an environment for the mission to flourish. What it looks like to build relational capital is you have to create an environment. And I'll go with a ministry illustration here. For years, I have led our small group ministry, our community groups here at Grace. And when we talk about leaders, and we have some pretty lofty goals for what we want to happen in groups, as far as people being able to experience life change and spiritual transformation and maturity. But the number one thing that a leader has to do is they don't have control over any of that. All they can do is create an atmosphere, create a community where people can engage, where the Holy Spirit can work, and people have the freedom to share, to listen, to ask for help, to receive prayer. That all that can happen in a living room, in an environment that has been created. But you can't dictate the process. Same thing for leadership. As you're building relational capital, what you're trying to do is you're creating an environment for that mission to flourish. Second, defining and developing the team. Defining and developing the team. So you're recruiting team members. You are defining their jobs on the team as they help accomplish the mission. And so a big part of this is just communication. Communication, communication, communication. What's the number one aspect of a healthy team? They communicate. That everybody's on the same page. That everybody knows the cause. That everybody understands the mission. And that we're building relationships and we're moving forward. Third thing, confidence to lead up, to lead sideways, and to lead down. Up, sideways, and down. Another way to say it is, can you lead those who are above you, beside you, below you? I like the idea of leading up because that presents a challenge. A lot of us have had to face that challenge of leading people who are in a different season, who may be more mature, more seasoned, have a greater skill set, but for whatever reason, we're in charge of leading them, and so we have to have the confidence to lead up. We have to have the confidence to lead sideways. Have to have the confidence to be able to lead down. Emotional availability. We'll talk a lot more about that as we go forward. And then the courage to to be honest. So these are five elements that I think make up, if we were fleshing out the definition of what it looks like to build relational capital, these are five things we would want to say. Why do we use the word capital? What are we talking about there? Well, obviously it's an economic term. It's an economic term. You can have financial capital. You can have natural resources. A country can have natural resources. That's a source of capital for them. You can own a business and have a lot of talented people, and you have a lot of talent capital. And the goal is to take that capital in a business setting and turn it into profit, to accumulate wealth, to accumulate power. Well, in a relational setting, you can have social capital or relational capital or social capital. And in a leadership setting, what we're talking about is influence. We want to use that for influence. We want to use that to help people grow, to help people change. Spiritually speaking, we're called to be conformed to the image of Christ. I don't know about you, but that is a lot of change for me. I've seen a lot of change over the last 20 years. I've got a lot of change left to go. And so I need people speaking into my life, influencing my life, leveraging their relational capital to help me continue to be on the progress of change, of growth. And so that's one reason why we use the word capital. It also has this transactional inference. Transactional. Relationships should always be two ways. There should always be give and take in relationships. And what you're doing with relational capital is you can build it up, and in one moment, you can withdraw it all and deplete your account. So let me give you a couple of examples. So I have an 11-year-old son, and so about to head off into middle school next year. And so what are we doing? We are having a lot of conversations. Tens of conversations that turn into hundreds of conversations that over the years will be thousands of conversations about life, about the things that he's going to face, about struggles, and particularly, as we've been talking about as a church, about the area of sex and sexuality. And so what I am doing is I am building and building and building relational capital with him. I'm not having one conversation. I'm having hundreds of conversations so that he feels the freedom to engage me at any time around anything that he has a question about, something that he hears that he's not sure about, something that makes him feel uncomfortable. He doesn't have to worry because I've got all this capital built up with him as an authority figure in his life, but also someone who just cares deeply about him. And I've expressed that in many, many, many ways over the years. And so we have this relationship. Okay, you can see that, how that plays out in so many different aspects, particularly in your home. Let me give you another example. We talk about depleting it. What if you are the coach of your son's basketball team, soccer team, baseball team, daughter's team, whatever? And part of the reason why you wanted to be their coach is so that you could engage some folks in the community, engage in the neighborhood. You feel like you have something to offer and you want to help shape the lives of young men and women. Okay, so you're building relational capital until that moment, halfway through the season, when that umpire or that referee that you know is not qualified to be calling your game makes a big-time mistake and you lose your temper. And you rant and you rave and you yell, and you know what happened? All of your relational capital that you have been building up just went out the window with the kids, with the parents, with the community. See how that works? See how it's transactional? And so it's something to be cherished. It's something to be jealous for. It's something to be guarded. And I also like to think about it in kind of keeping with the financial aspect of compounding interest. Like relational capital can have this compounding interest because it's so simple to gain. It can happen in a bunch of different ways. So part of my job as pastor here is I get to visit all the different campuses and I lead those campus pastors. And so that puts me in relationship with a lot of different people on the different campuses. And so over the years, I've got a lot of friendships and I know a lot of people and I know a lot about people and I know a lot of names, but I'm finding it difficult to retain it all. And so a few weeks ago, I was at a campus. Ran into somebody I've had several conversations with, but for some reason, I just can't remember their name. I just can't pull it up. And so there they are again, and I'm walking towards them, and I'm going to engage them, and I really want to just say their name, but I can't take the chance that I'm not going to get it right. And so there's a staff member who's walking towards me, and I grab him, and I say, hey, what's that person's name? He's like, he's not on my ministry team, and I see him all the time, but I'm not sure. And I'm like, you're no help. And so I keep moving forward, and I engage. But here's what happens. So I'm engaging, building off some relational capital from before. Well, meantime, staff member meets key leader behind me, another key leader who is in relationship with this guy, and he says, hey, what's that guy's name? And so while I'm having a conversation, building on some relational capital, staff guy yells over to that guy and thanks him for what he is doing that morning in a service role using his name. Ah, oh, what does that do to me? That gives me the opportunity to engage him on a different level using his name, and staff member has just built up huge relational capital for me, all right? Small things, but what does it show? It shows a social awareness, an emotional intelligence, and the fact that we care about people enough to be able to call them by their name, know their story, know where they're gifted, know where they're talented, and be able to love them as God has given them to us specifically as a church, right? So when I think about this area of relational capital, I mentioned earlier that it's just one of those things that comes natural to a lot of people. It's one of those things that's come natural to me. I'm a very simple, small-town kid. I grew up in eastern North Carolina in a kind of a blue-collar home, strong work ethic. Things were real simple, real easy. I mean, think Mayberry, think the Cleaver household. I mean, that was really kind of home growing up. And I was always interested, though, in people. And I was a bit of a collector. It started out with stickers and baseball cards, and it kind of moved to memorabilia and sports memorabilia because I'm a big sports fan, and really, really experiences. But being from a small town, I didn't have a lot of experiences, and so I would collect experiences through relationships with other people, particularly when I went off to college. And if it came down to learning from something out of a book or learning over a cup of coffee and asking a bunch of questions, I would always want to ask questions. I would always want to be in relationship. And so relational capital was just something that I really did as a product of somewhat who I was and my personality. And so I also saw it modeled from a spiritual aspect, because after I came to faith, I had a bunch of different men, Chris and Daryl and Brian. And what they did is they just got to know me. They just got to know me, and they got to speak into in my life as they saw how God was reshaping some of the things that were giftings more towards God's glory. And my pathway in life was really beginning to move in a different direction than I had spent the first 20 years. And they were able to just be a huge encouragement to me and build relational capital with me, expecting nothing in return. And so because of that discipleship relationship, and really that's a lot of what discipleship is just carving out the time to spend with someone, then I'm able to then be able to pay that forward for the next 20 years, the last 20 years. But if we go back to the graphic, building relational capital and being action-oriented are not opposites. You can't have one and not the other. And so being action-oriented was always more difficult for me because of the simplicity, some ways, of my background and my personality of wanting to have everything figured out, wanting to have a plan, wanting to have extreme clarity. And what I've learned over the last 10 years, especially here at Grace, is that was just hiding. That was just insecurity, what Matt talked about a couple of weeks ago. Because I want to manage risks and I want to manage consequences. And so what I've had to learn is through these leadership values is how to leverage relationships and always be on the move, always be action-oriented. And then if you have a mission that is big enough, that is broad enough, you can't accomplish it on your own anyway. You need to be a part of a team. You need to be a part of a family. You need to be part of a church that together there is more power in what you are doing. And so we need to be in relationships. We need to be in strong relationships. Fatal flaws of leadership. I want to recommend a book to you. Each week we've tried to give you a couple things to do outside of our time together. Here's a book called The Extraordinary Leader. And what I like about the book is it basically says we can help make you a leader. It tackles the whole "are leaders made or born," which We could have a whole nother discussion about that. But they just said, look, we've examined that there are areas for everyone to be able to grow in their leadership ability. And as we have talked about it in this context of men's roundtable, not so much a matter of gifting, but as a matter of core calling and responsibility, I think this type of book resonates. The Extraordinary Leader. And let me just show you, to drive home the importance of being relationally connected and building relational capital, they did a big study. They did 360-degree feedback from close to 500 executives, of which about 10%, after 3 years, had derailed their leadership. They were just out of the game because of mistakes, leadership mistakes that they have made, hence the term fatal flaws. And then they broadened the study, and they looked at, those were executives, they looked at 11,000 leaders, again examining 360-degree feedback, and they said, where do those leaders, the ones that fall in the bottom 10%, what do they have in common? So, huge pool, bottom 10%, they took a look at these commonalities, and I want you to see, we're going to quickly go through the list, don't feel like you need to write them all down, but I want you to see how many of them have to do with relationships and building relational capital. So take a look. First one, not being inspirational, lack of energy and enthusiasm. So a leader who, any new assignment that they get, it's not an opportunity to embrace, it's a burden that they feel. And they just suck the energy out of the room. They don't want to rally people to a cause. They want to protect. And so everything, every new opportunity is like an Eeyore moment. Oh, well, I guess we got to go do that now. So a lack of energy and enthusiasm, not being inspirational. Accepting mediocrity in performance. Go to the next one. Lack of clarity and direction. So I want you to hear some of the other values as we look at the list. I hear owning the cause when I see that. Lack of clarity and direction. Loss of trust due to bad judgment and poor decision making. The research here was when a leader makes a promise, doesn't keep it. When gives people some responsibility and then doesn't follow up on it. What happens? Those people feel used, misused, taken advantage of. So we have a loss of trust, poor decisions, bad judgment. Someone who is not a collaborative team player, building relational capital, is a weakness because other individuals are a threat to them. They're always in competition. So the idea of pulling a team together, well, what if I get overshadowed on this team? What if I'm not the best? I'm going to lose some glory. So they're not a team player. Not a good role model. Lack of integrity. I hear session one on character when I see that. Keep going. No self-development or learning from mistakes. We're going to get to the area of self-awareness. Lacking interpersonal skills. Resistant to new ideas. Reinventing continuously. That's coming up in our leadership values. That's a resistance to new ideas. And then focus on self and not the development of others. And so you've put all these on one slide. Not inspirational, loss of trust, not a team player, lacking interpersonal skills, not developing others. Over half of the fatal flaws that this big study came up with have to do with building relationships. Building relational capital. And so you look at that and you go, okay, well, first of all, when you look at that list, it's pretty obvious. It's obvious that if you didn't do those things, then you would be a failure in leadership. Yes. And that those failures have an impact on everyone. They have an impact on everyone in a family. They have impact on everyone in a business organization. The second thing that's when they all have in common is their sins of omission. When you look at that list, what you see is complacency, apathy, people who are just lukewarm. And what comes to mind? As men, we talked about the four pillars. What I think about is I think about passivity. I think about that there's that core struggle that gets us again. is we become passive. We become passive in relationships. And it becomes fatal flaws to leadership. And notice what we didn't talk about when we looked at that list. We didn't talk about intellect. We didn't talk about knowledge, education, technical competencies. They almost all had to do with this idea of emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence. Being able to relate to others. I want to piggyback on the scripture from Philippians. We're going to get to a couple of biblical texts here as we move down to land this plane. Philippians 2 here. Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. Just a basic principle of what does it look like to consider others more important than yourself. And how does that transfer into building relational capital? Well, it's really simple. The question is, do you care about other people? Do you care? Do you care enough to use their name, to look them in the eye, to give them a firm handshake, to smile, to laugh at their jokes, to be an encouragement, to ask them questions, to not always talk about yourself and dominate the discussion? That seems very simple, but it starts there. If we can't do those things because we are so preoccupied with ourselves, we are not loving other people. And we are never going to really be able to accomplish the mission that God has given us in our family, in our schools, in our jobs, because we're too focused on ourselves. Too driven by selfish ambition and conceit, which is just an over-realized sense of self. It's vanity, it's pride. The theological piece for this would be found in Genesis three different times and in the book of James. And it's where God says, I made man in my image, in my likeness. It's called the Imago Dei. Imago, I-M-A-G-O. So image, Dei, D-E-I. Like deity, being in the image of God. And it's what separates mankind from everything else. I mean, yes, you can see God's handiwork everywhere, in all of creation. But this idea of man being made in the image of God with dignity and honor is what separates us from Fluffy and Biscuit and all your other pets at home, all the other animals at the zoo, all the other parts of creation. This is what we share. We share a sense of morality. We share a sense of mental, emotional, relational capacity with the creator of the universe. We are made in his image. From conception to death, all human beings are image bearers. And we forget about this. We become desensitized to this. Let's talk about the people who are far from us first. So when you watch the news and you see something going on halfway around the world, whether it's Syria or Russia, and you go, I'm not like those people. And we tend to judge what's going on, or just be apathetic. If we had this idea that people being made in the image of God, then how would that affect the way we watch the news, when we drive past the nursing homes, when we think about the orphanages, the parts of our state that we don't want to stop for gas in, the parts of our world that we would just pretend don't exist? How would the image of God change the way that we think about the mental institutions, the rehab facilities, the prisons? How would that change the way that we view humanity being made in the image of God? So we'll start there, something far from us. So then let's move it back to the people who are near to us. One way we can illustrate what it looks like to build relational capital is the negative. If you don't build relational capital, then you tend to use people, manipulate people, dominate, bully, or just completely withdraw, isolate, and go do something yourself because you don't really think they can help. You disqualify them and their abilities, and you just pull away. So not caring enough about people and not seeing them made in God's image with God-given gifts and abilities, honor and dignity has a far effect and it has a near effect. And so let's make sure that we're not using, we're not manipulating, we're not dominating, we're not isolating ourselves. Let me give you a biblical illustration. The life of Paul, okay? Paul, he goes into a place called Philippi. He starts a church. He starts it out of relationships. The first three converts to that church, there's a wealthy woman who is from Asian descent, who is in the fashion industry, okay? Lydia, down by the river. There's a demon-possessed slave girl. She's been sold into slavery by her parents. She's the second convert. And then there's a jailer guarding Paul and Silas. Blue-collar guy, punching the clock. Those three people come to faith, starts the church in Philippi. What do they have in common? The only thing they have in common is that they're made in the image of God. They're made in the image of God, and Christ came to sacrifice his life and die for them, and Paul's in relationship with them, and through building relationship capital and having a mission, they start a church. Start the first church, an influential church for all of Europe. Being made in the image of God. Take a look, I want you to turn here to Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 9. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, I want you to see how Paul describes some of the elements here of being relationally connected, particularly when he talks about creating an environment. We talked about creating an environment for the mission to flourish, and we talked about being emotionally available. Listen to Paul's words here, starting in verse 19. 1 Corinthians 9, beginning in 19, he says, "Even though I'm a free man with no master, I've become a slave to all people, to bring many to Christ. When I was with the Jews, I lived like a Jew to bring the Jews to Christ. When I was with those who follow the Jewish law, I too lived under that law. Even though I'm not subject to the law, I did this so I could bring to Christ those who were under the law. And when I'm with the Gentiles who don't follow the Jewish law, I too live apart from that law so I can bring them to Christ. But I do not ignore the law of God. I obey the law of Christ. When I am with those who are weak," think emotional availability here. "When I'm with those who are weak, I share their weakness, for I want to bring the weak to Christ. Yes, I try to find common ground with everyone, doing everything I can to save some. I do everything to spread the good news and share in its blessings." You see how he talks about creating that environment? Being available, building up that capital, because he is driven. Talk about Paul. He is driven by mission. He is driven by mission. And then let's don't leave the action side of it so you can see how the integration works. Look at 24. You can see him. He's ramping up the energy. "Don't you realize that in a race, everyone runs, but only one person gets the prize? So run to win. Take action. All athletes are disciplined in their training. They do it to win a prize that will fade away, but we do it for an eternal prize. So I run with purpose in every step. I'm not just shadow boxing. I discipline my body like an athlete, training it to do what it should. Otherwise, I fear that after preaching to others, I might be disqualified." What he's talking about there is that I might not receive the rewards that God has for me in heaven because I didn't take all the action that he wanted me to while I was here, and I didn't do it through the relationships that he provided for me. It's a great picture, I think, of those two coming together. I want you to turn over one more passage to Galatians chapter 2. A few of the other aspects of the definition that we looked at was the confidence to lead in all kinds of directions, to lead up, to lead sideways, to lead down, to develop a team, and the courage to be honest. This is a great little passage because you have here the Apostle Paul, who's been out ministering for 14 years. He's been away from Jerusalem. He's been out in different parts of the Middle East, just building relationships, sharing what God has done in his life. Okay, but he's been doing it with a little different crowd. He's been doing it with a Gentile crowd. He's been doing it with us. He's been hanging out with us. Okay, a little different than how Christianity started. So we're at a transition point in the church. Okay, so now Paul, he's got to go back to Jerusalem, and he's going to check in with the leaders of the church. Listen to the relationship aspect of this. Galatians 2, verse 1, he says, 14 years later, I went back to Jerusalem again. He's writing, this is his biography, in a sense. He's writing to the church in Galatia, who is under some persecution, because people are telling him they need to do some things, that they don't have freedom in Christ, that they have to do some things that they don't need to do. Okay, so he's explaining to him all that he's done on their behalf. He's leading down. But this is what he says. 14 years ago, I went back to Jerusalem and I took Barnabas and Titus. So he's got a team. He's developed a team. Verse 2, I went there because God revealed to me that I should go. And while I was there, I met privately with those considered to be the leaders of the church. So he's leading up. And I shared with them the message I had been preaching to the Gentiles. I wanted to make sure that we were in agreement, for fear that all my efforts had been wasted and I was running the race for nothing. And they supported me and did not even demand that my companion Titus be circumcised. Whew. If you're Titus, aren't you really glad? Hey, Titus, you're on the team, but when we get to Jerusalem, there might be this little issue that we have to talk about with you. Verse 4, even the question came up only because of some so-called Christians there, false ones really, who were secretly brought in. They sneaked in. They spied on us. They wanted to take away the freedom that we have in Christ Jesus. They wanted to enslave us and force us to follow their Jewish regulations. But we refused to give in to them for a single moment. We wanted to preserve the truth of the gospel message for you. And the leaders of the church had nothing to add to what I was preaching. Verse 7, instead they saw what God had given me the responsibility, of preaching the gospel to the Gentiles, just that he had given Peter the responsibility of preaching to the Jews. For it's the same God who worked through Peter as the apostle to the Jews, and who worked through me as the apostle to the Gentiles. And then he tells us who he met with. In fact, James, Peter, and John, the big three, leaders of the church, the pillars of the church, they recognized the gift God had given me, and they accepted Barnabas and me as their co-workers. They encouraged us to keep preaching to the Gentiles while they continued their work with the Jews. We got a division of labor. We're being action-oriented, but we're splitting things up so we can accomplish more. We can accomplish our mission. We're doing it through relationships. There's a lot of communication here. We're leading up. We're leading sideways. We're leading down. Their only suggestion was that we keep on helping the poor, which I've always been eager to do. Okay, and then here, some of the part that's a little bit hard for us, who relationally connected, building relational capital comes easy. This part is not so easy. It's the courage to be honest, to have candor, to be frank. Keep going. Verse 11, Peter came to Antioch. I had to oppose him. Peter, leader of the church, pillar, extended the right hand of fellowship. Now I've got to oppose him for what he did was very wrong. When he first arrived, he ate with the Gentiles who were not circumcised. But then afterwards, when some friends of James came, Peter wouldn't eat with the Gentiles anymore. He was afraid of criticism from these people who insisted on the necessity of circumcision. And as a result, other Jewish Christians followed Peter's hypocrisy, and even Barnabas was led astray. Even a team member got led astray. And so when I saw that they were not following the message, I said to Peter in front of all the others, this is a public rebuke, the courage to be honest in public, taking it to a whole different level. Since you, a Jew by birth, have discarded the Jewish laws and are living like a Gentile, why are you now trying to make these Gentiles follow the Jewish traditions? Do you see how Paul was so skilled at weaving in and out of relationships and building that relational capital? And he did it because he was motivated by mission, and he saw the image of God in every person. And so he did not waste a single opportunity to have leadership influence. You see that? You could go through all throughout his story in Acts are all throughout the letters, and you could just make a list of the way he talks about people. He cares deeply for people. He sees them as being an integral part of his team. So I want to leave you with just four ideas on how you can grow in relational capital. Again, not earth-shattering, but we've got to do some self-awareness to see if I'm good at this, or if I just punt because I'm more geared towards something else, more geared towards action. So the question is, how are you at listening? How are you at listening? In his book, The Contrarian Leader, Steve Sample says, the average person suffers from three delusions. One, we all think that we're good drivers. Two, we all think that we have a good sense of humor. And three, we think that we're good listeners. And so he would examine us to see if we're really good listeners. And two reasons why we're not. One, we don't care. Okay, so that's why we start with the theological piece, the Imago Dei. And then secondly, we lack the skills. So in order to be a good listener, you just have to ask good questions. And you have to be available. So it's going to take some time. You have to actively listen. Actively listen. So you ask questions where you're asking people to define things, to explain things, and to tell you how they feel. Don't just ask yes and no questions. And when you're talking to people, you look for those entry gates where they give you some emotion, where they talk about being sad, being frustrated, being mad, being angry, being bitter. And then you engage them. They have given you a huge entry point into their life, into their story. And so that's where you walk through that gate and you engage them. But when you're engaging them on emotional terms, what do you have to be? You better be emotionally available yourself. Or it comes across as disingenuous. Because it is disingenuous. So you got to be emotionally available for folks. Okay, second, develop trust. How you build relational capital, you have to develop trust. When you're listening, asking good questions, then this is a natural overflow of that. And part of it is you need to be able to ask for feedback. Simple feedback question. This came from Andy Stanley a couple months ago in one of his podcasts. He says, ask this question, whomever you're dealing with. If you're in my position, what would you do differently? If you were in my position, what would you do differently? And what you're doing is you're giving people the entryway to speak into you. And that is how you develop trust. Take a look at this. This might be worth coming for this morning. Trust is a big deal. Can't have relational capital without it. So add up your credibility. Okay? Credibility is your knowledge and your competency. Do you know what you're doing? Reliability. Have you done it over time? Are you consistent? Are you predictable? And then the intimacy of the relationship. Is a relationship, is it warm? Is there closeness? Do we get along? So if you take your credibility and your reliability and your intimacy and you add all of that up, if you really have trust, you've got to divide it by self-interest. What do I mean by self-interest? Do people think that you are after personal gain and personal glory? Selfish ambition or vain conceit is how Philippians 2 says it. Or do they think that you're out for their good or the good of the organization? And so you see, the higher that number goes, you are diluting the trust factor in your home, with your spouse, with your kids, in your ministry, in the workplace. So credibility, reliability, intimacy, added up, divided by self-interest. It's a great equation, something to really think about. The last two things, just to help build relational capital, just be inspirational. Just be inspirational. And what that means is you don't have to be football coach, rah-rah, let's go get them, but what you have to do is you have to believe that God put you in charge, that God gave you influence as a leader. You have to believe that, not shy away from it.
and you make others believe it by thinking the best of them, thinking that they work hard, that they're going to follow through, having expectations, and then showing them that you're there to support them. Be inspirational. And then the last thing is just develop. You have to be able to develop individuals. And that may mean that you give them resources, you give them tools, you give them experiences, you give them yourself, you share what you're learning, you ask them what they're learning. One of the Harvard Business Review did an article, big survey, and they found that 1 out of 4 people, when they defined a win at work, it was because there was room for them to grow professionally and room to grow personally, room to be developed through relationships. And that's what bound them to the organization. That was more important than money. It was more important than thinking that they were even doing a great job, the fact that they could have an opportunity to grow. And so here's the questions as you go into some group time. How well do you balance your relationships with being action-oriented? Do you overvalue one? Do you undervalue one? How can you grow in your appreciation of people being made in the image of God? Because I think that really determines if we care about folks or not. When we see them, do we see God's, do we see his imprint? And so when we are in relationship with them, we have so much to gain, we have so much to learn, we have so much to benefit from the relational aspect that we can't help but build relational capital. And then out of those 4 applications, listening, building trust, being inspirational, and developing others, which is not easy, where do you struggle? Where do you struggle in this particular leadership value? So we would just close by saying that building relational capital, it is imperative to owning the cause. And so, but not only does it help us find success at home, at work, at school, all those things, but what it does is it honors the God-given gifts of people in the process, and it brings him a lot of glory. Building relational capital honors the people that God created and that he sent Jesus to redeem. So it is an important leadership value for us as men, because we have a lot of influence. We have a lot of opportunities. So let's consider how that value plays into the bigger picture of bringing God glory. Let's pray. Father, thank you for such a big topic. On some levels, it seems very simple and counterintuitive. And in other ways, it seems very, very complex. And so help us now to take some time with the men that are around us to really think through how you can take these concepts and you can deepen them in us and help us to grow, to become more spiritually mature, become better leaders that glorify and honor you. In Jesus' name, amen.